step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Javier with Pretend Radio, and this season, I'm embedding myself in a cult.
Throw him to the ground and get his devils out!
Many in the media have tried to get in front of the accused cult leader, Jane Whaley, and have failed.
We have asked you to leave.
But somehow, I got in.
How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm here to speak with Jane Whaley. She invited me to service today. Yeah.
This season, we're going deeper into the Word of Faith Fellowship than ever before. This story is on a collision course, and it's not going to end well.
Why would anybody want to harm him?
Sometimes we hurt other people by hurting people they love.
Pretend Radio, Season 3, The Prophet.
What's the matter with us? We're not going to burn! God will!
Southern Fried True Crime covers cases that are not suitable for young listeners, and there may also be some explicit language used. Listener discretion is advised. In January of 2012, a young couple from a tiny town in the northeast corner of Tennessee was found shot execution style in their home. Bill Payne and Billie Jean Hayworth had a six-month-old son who was found still cradled in his dead mother's arms. Her blood streaked his small forehead, and he was out of cries, not even whimpering by the time he was found. It was a miracle he was alive. Law enforcement were initially baffled at the shocking double murder, but they soon uncovered a web of lies and manipulation stemming from the demented obsession of a 30-year-old shut-in. Bill, Billie Jean, and a couple of their friends had been targeted online by Janelle Potter, a local woman they had innocently befriended. But that wasn't even the half of it. Janelle catfished her own parents and boyfriend. She manipulated them into planning the hit on the young couple, destroying several lives and throwing the small rural community into the national spotlight. Welcome to episode 39, Catfishing in Mountain City, Tennessee, the Facebook Murders. Mountain City is located in Johnson County in the northeastern tip of Tennessee. It lies just a few miles from both the Virginia and North Carolina state lines, nestled between the mountains that border those states. Johnson County lies on the western slope of the Appalachian Mountains. Hilly and mountainous, the county covers approximately 290 square miles, or around 466 kilometers. And the highest elevation is Snake Mountain at 5,574 feet. Before the arrival of white settlers, the Cherokee, Creek, and Yuki used the area as hunting and burial grounds. The first settlement in the area was named Trade due to the location where settlers, Native Americans, and frontiersmen swapped goods and news. Daniel Boone hunted and explored the area between 1761 and 1769. Numerous settlers followed Boone's trail through the wilderness, including John Honeycutt, who built a cabin on Roan Creek, first settling that area. Mountain City, sitting on an elevation of 2,418 feet, is the highest incorporated city in Tennessee. It was originally commissioned as the seat of justice for the area. The commissioners purchased 25 and a half acres and laid out the town, which they named Taylorsville, in honor of Colonel James P. Taylor. The first courthouse was completed in 1837, and 2 years later, Johnson County built a jail there. In 1866, Taylorsville was incorporated, and the first mayor changed its name to Mountain City in 1885 to reflect the majestic countryside the area was famous for. It's a tiny town with just over 2,000 residents, and it serves as the seat of Johnson County, a community of only about 18,000. Picturesque small towns dot the countryside in this area, where everyone knows each other and religion is a part of everyday life. While agriculture is still the main economy for the county, with tobacco being the biggest cash crop, the textile industry dominates the small towns like Mountain City. Parkdale Mills, a thread factory, is the largest employer in Mountain City. But as with many small rural towns, opiate addiction also runs rampant, and often the only connection to the outside world is social media. This was particularly true for one resident. Born in 1982, Janelle Potter had moved to Mountain City with her parents from Pennsylvania when she was 22 years old. She is often described as mentally undeveloped, and with an IQ of 70, she is definitely in the range for developmental disabilities. She was a sickly child with an auditory disability. She was not fully deaf, but she had trouble discerning tone and therefore had trouble relating normally to other people. For instance, she did not catch sarcasm in conversations. She took everything literally and very personally. Janelle was relatively attractive, with a nice smile and curly brown hair, but she also stood 6 feet tall and was very awkward. She often behaved inappropriately when meeting new people, hugging them or crowding their personal space. And usually after meeting someone new, that person would receive a friend request from Janelle, no matter how casual their introduction had been. She had no real friends and lived her life through social media and chat rooms. She stayed on the personal computer located in a small bedroom in her parents' home and lived what life she could through the internet. She suffered from type 1 diabetes and other health issues, but probably the most detrimental to her mental health was the complete control her parents kept over her. Barbara and Marvin Potter had another child 6 years older than Janelle named Christy. Christy would become estranged from her family as an adult after years of living with her parents' unusual hyper-focus on her sister. As an adult who got away from the family, she was in a unique position to give insight into the family dynamics after the murders occurred and the family went on trial. Christy felt her parents coddled Janelle, who she said was much smarter than she was given credit for, though she was definitely too sheltered and smothered. She may have been socially awkward and was in special education up until her high school graduation, but having been with her parents that long, she knew exactly how to manipulate them, and she knew how to keep secrets. Marvin, better known as Buddy Potter, was on disability. He was a war veteran, a former Marine who was very proud of his service. The Potter home was a veritable shrine to his service in Vietnam, with his medals, pictures, and other mementos all over the house. Many years after the war, Buddy fell off a scaffolding at work, some 75 feet, injuring his back. He was on permanent disability. After this, Barbara went to work for Hewlett-Packard, while they still lived in Pennsylvania. But by the time the family moved, Barbara had also permanently stopped working due to health issues. The Potters moved from Pennsylvania to Tennessee in 2004 to be closer to Barbara's elderly mother, who also lived in Johnson County. They moved to a home just a few miles from downtown Mountain City, but they never liked it there. Although they had come from a smaller town on the outskirts of Philadelphia, tiny Mountain City would still have been culture shock. No mall, no movie theater, no real restaurants other than fast food, nothing much to do unless you were outdoorsy. Watauga Lake and a portion of the Appalachian Trail were both in Johnson County, and many locals enjoyed hiking, camping, fishing, and all things the gorgeous landscape had to offer. But not the Potters. It's safe to say they kept to themselves, cooped up in their small home, none of them working or socializing. Barb and Buddy did enjoy working in their yard, but Janelle was truly a shut-in. In contrast, the victims of the double murder, Bill Payne and Billie Jean Hayworth, were locals who loved the area and embraced the mountain culture. Billy Carl Payne was a native of Mountain City, 38 years old, and had worked in the same thread factory since graduating from high school. He lived with his father, Bill Payne Sr., known as Paw Bill, and was known as a good time guy, meaning he partied and he liked the ladies. But Bill held down a steady job and traveled as much as he could. He may have been an addict, but it's safe to say he was highly functioning, especially in comparison to the opiate-addled crowd he sometimes ran with. He met Billie Jean Hayworth in 2009 when she was hired on to the cleaning crew at the factory where he worked. A pretty brunette in her early 20s, Billie Jean caught his eye and soon the pair were an item. Billie Jean was a cheerful, good-hearted Mountain City girl. She loved the outdoors and also had a passion for flea markets, auctions, and yard sales. She was a friendly, popular girl who fell quickly for Bill Payne. But she didn't like the partying. She wasn't into drugs herself, or was she much of a drinker. She was a positive influence on Bill Payne. She moved in with him at his father's house just a little over a year after they started dating. And then Bill and Billie Jean's son Tyler was born in July of 2011. The new mother was delighted with her son, and Bill had turned over a new leaf along with the birth of his child. He had fathered a child when he was in his 20s, but didn't stay involved in the boy's life, especially after the mother moved to Florida, taking his son with her. But Bill vowed the same wouldn't happen with Tyler, and he was truly in love with Billie Jean. He wanted to make her happy and build a life with her. He began seeking treatment for opiate abuse and was prescribed buprenorphine and also Suboxone to help with the cravings. The couple were engaged and adjusting to the new baby. Bill did still take pills a bit, and he had started selling the Suboxone rather than take it because it was so valuable. He was trying to make more money to not only help with the baby, but so he and Billie Jean could get married. It's fair to say he was still an addict, but again, highly functioning, and he was trying to clean up his life, despite the petty drug sales. But through all of this, the couple had also been dealing with online harassment from an odd source. Janelle Potter had met Bill Payne through his sister, Tracy Greenwell. Tracy had met the Potters when she was working for Mountain City Pharmacy in late 2008. As a side note, throughout the story, you'll hear about Janelle meeting someone at a grocery store or market. Again, there just wasn't much to do in Mountain City. Janelle was a lonely shut-in. She latched on to people who were friendly to her. Tracy was one of these people. She felt sorry for Janelle and decided to befriend her. But just to be able to take Janelle to a mall not 30 minutes across the border in Boone, North Carolina, Tracy had to come over to the Potter home like a prospective suitor and meet Buddy and Barbara, though Janelle at that point would have been about 26 years old. The Potters liked Tracy, and she and Janelle hung around quite a bit for a while. She was chummy with the whole family, and she'd have to be, given Buddy and Barbara's overbearing protectiveness. At some point during this friendship, Tracy took Janelle over to her brother and Paul Bill's house. This is how Bill Payne came to know Janelle, and it seems very innocuous. What's more, Bill and Tracy thought to set Janelle up with another loner, too awkward to socialize normally. Jamie Curd was in his mid-30s and had never had a girlfriend. But he was a loyal son and brother, staying with both of his parents and his brother until their deaths. He had quit high school to work at Parkdale Mills, the same factory where Bill worked, in order to help his mother with the bills when his father passed away. Jamie often seems to come off as gullible or naive, and this is fair. But he wasn't stupid. He was just lonely, with little education, and stuck in a small country town. Much like Janelle. Jamie Curd wasn't just a friend of Bill Payne's. He was his cousin. But he was actually one of his hard partying friends, too. Jamie would later admit to being addicted to pills and drinking a lot. But it was something he definitely tried to hide from Janelle, and particularly her parents. Not that Barbara and Buddy liked him at first anyway. Jamie met their daughter sometime in 2010, but they didn't approve. Barbara, in particular, had quite the low opinion of Jamie. She basically thought he was trash. She said he was dirty and smelled. This opinion of Jamie was a part of hundreds of emails that Barbara sent to a family friend named Chris. A friend who was supposedly in the CIA. A friend that kept an eye on the Potter home and Janelle in particular. A friend that was protective of Janelle and gained the trust of her overprotective parents. A friend who did not exist. I'm going to pause now to hear a word from today's sponsor. We all need someone to talk to. Sometimes life is just overwhelming and choosing a therapist can be an added stressor. Is there something that's bothering you or stopping you from moving forward in life? BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you whenever you're ready to talk. You can connect with a professional counselor in a private and safe environment that is convenient to your schedule. BetterHelp has over 3,000 licensed therapists in all 50 states treating depression, anxiety, trauma, grief, family conflicts, and many other issues that affect us all. And if you're not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at no charge. It's secure, convenient, professional, and affordable. There's even financial aid for those who qualify. From your phone, desktop, or tablet, there are four ways to connect with the professional counselor you're matched with. You can text, chat, talk on the phone, or by video with someone in under 24 hours. So why not get started today? Southern Fried listeners get 10% off your first month with the discount code Southern. Go to betterhelp.com/Southern and simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/Southern. Before the break, I mentioned the Potter's imaginary friend and CIA agent, Chris. But to better understand Chris, we need to back up a bit. Remember how I told you that Janelle had a habit of friending strangers she had just met on Facebook? Well, her one real friend in life so far was Tracy Greenwell, Bill's sister. Naturally, they were Facebook friends. So when Janelle met Bill, she sent him a friend request right away. This would be in late 2008, early 2009, right before he met Billie Jean. In 2009, when he and Billie Jean started dating, Bill Payne had no idea that Janelle was harboring a crush for him. This wasn't the first time Janelle had fixated on someone who had no idea, but I'll circle back to that guy. At first, Janelle seemed to take his relationship with Billie Jean okay. Considering no one knew about her feelings, it would have been obvious if she hadn't. But she immediately sent a friend request to Billie Jean, who accepted. And shortly after that, she sent friend requests to two of Billie Jean's friends, Lindsay Thomas and Tara Osborne. She friended Lindsay first and almost immediately started posting on her own Facebook page and sometimes commenting on their photos that Billie Jean and Lindsay were mean girls. She even took to stealing photos of Billie Jean and Lindsay lying out on the beach and other group shots and posting it to her own page, tagging their names. Again, making derogatory comments and always referring to them as mean girls, as though they had bullied her. But it wasn't true. Like everyone else Janelle befriended, the girls just tolerated her. They felt sorry for her, but certainly didn't pick on her. Janelle may not have had outward signs of mental disability, but it was no secret that she was a bit slow. And despite what Janelle would insist for years, these were nice girls. They were not out to get her. Lindsay Thomas decided to reach out to Janelle. She called her at the Potter home and asked Janelle to stop posting things about her and Billie Jean and to stop stealing their pictures and bad-mouthing them. They had done nothing to her, and she couldn't understand Janelle's malice. But Janelle played innocent. She said she had no idea what Lindsay was talking about. Lindsay was frustrated and decided to just unfriend Janelle since she couldn't reason with her. Just days later, she started receiving harassing phone calls. She later testified that she got 15 to 20 calls a day, all from the Potter home. She said that no one usually spoke on these calls, there was just heavy breathing, but occasionally a man would get on the line and shout at her to leave Janelle alone. Of course, she shouted back that she wasn't the one that had called, but to no avail. She said sometimes the man would pick up the line and laugh maniacally like a cartoon villain. Around the same time that Janelle had Facebook-friended Billie Jean's friend Lindsay Thomas, she met another friend of hers, Tara Osborne, while in line at the Food Country grocery store. Tara and her husband Brad were good friends with Bill Payne and Billie Jean, and when she spoke to Janelle at Food Country, none of the Facebook drama had really started. It was more like small-town chit-chat. Oh, you're friends with so-and-so. Me too. You get the idea. As usual, as soon as Janelle got home from Food Country, she sent Tara a friend request, and Tara stayed friendly with her, though Janelle definitely started getting on her nerves right away. She even had to shut off the feature on Facebook that shows when a user is online, because if Janelle saw Tara was on Facebook, she would instant message her every time. Everything was fine until the drama started with Billie Jean and Lindsay. Tara saw this happening and immediately unfriended Janelle and blocked her. About 2 weeks later, she got a private message from an account with Janelle's same picture and name that she had already blocked. Janelle had made another account. Janelle asked why Tara had unfriended her, and Tara simply responded that she didn't want to be in the middle of any drama and asked Janelle not to contact her again. Soon after this, Tara was roped into the same nasty comments as one of Billie Jean's mean girl friends in Janelle's mind. She also started receiving crank phone calls. Both Lindsay and Tara went to the sheriff's department to file harassment charges against Janelle. Both received little support from the police. Tara said she was told to fill out the forms herself and file with the court, only to have the suit dropped because she hadn't filled out something correctly. She finally got a clerk at the courthouse to help her refile. Lindsay had her own phone harassment complaint and had her day in court. Billie Jean came to testify for her, but the prosecutor threw out the case because they said she could not prove it was Janelle making the calls, even though she could prove the calls originated from the Potter house, and even though she had proof of Janelle's online harassment. That's ridiculous to me. Neither the police nor the DA's office took these complaints seriously. The prosecutor who would go on to try the Potter family, Dennis Brooks, wrote a book on the case. We will get into the book a little bit more later because it throws some ethical complications into the mix. But one part that struck me was towards the end when Mr. Brooks explained that he learned quite a lesson working on the tragic double murder. He said often prosecutors feel bogged down by what they consider to be light charges like phone harassment, stalking, and what he called simple domestic violence. I don't agree with Mr. Brooks' characterization of any kind of domestic violence being simple, but his point was, after this case, he realized the importance of taking those charges more seriously. He's right. And I'm glad he learned that, though it is disappointing to see a prosecutor voice those feelings in the first place. We would like to think our police and courts take threats to our well-being seriously, no matter where they originate. But he definitely gets points for honesty here. In my opinion, women like Lindsay and Tara wouldn't bother pressing charges against someone like Janelle unless they truly felt harassed. Even back in 2011, it was easy just to unfriend and block someone. It speaks to the level of harassment with the phone calls and also to the many accounts Janelle created to keep up the online harassment that the girls were willing to take the complaints to the police. Yes, there are instances of people using the court system and bogging down police and prosecutors with bogus claims, and that sucks, but it should not affect law enforcement or the court's treatment of all cases. Anyone with a complaint should be taken seriously until it's proven otherwise. But I digress. There was another Lindsay that came into the picture with Janelle around this time. Her name was Lindsay Potter, but she was not related to these Potters. Lindsay Potter also met Janelle at a grocery store, in line at the Food Lion where her brother worked. Much like Tara, she had no problems at first, and she was actually a bit friendlier with Janelle, feeling sorry for her. That's a common theme in this case. Everyone starts off feeling sorry for the grown woman that was so smothered by her parents, the shut-in with no real friends or love life. Janelle was in her late 20s at this point, and it is pathetic and pitiful to think of her like that. Lindsay Potter said that, like Tara, she noticed the drama Janelle was starting on Facebook. But instead of just unfriending her, Lindsay actually tried to help. She told Janelle that she felt her posts were inappropriate and childish, but of course, Janelle denied it was her doing it. She would later constantly insist that Billie Jean and her friends had either hacked her account or created the extra profiles themselves. She would never back down from this lie. Lindsay Potter remained Facebook friends with Janelle, but backed off of any real friendship. She said a couple of months after she admonished Janelle, Janelle sent her a private message whining that she was sick and it was those mean girls' fault. She claimed that they were harassing her online. Lindsay merely wrote back and told Janelle she didn't believe her, and then Janelle immediately blocked her. During all the drama Janelle was causing for her, Billie Jean was still moving forward with her life with Bill. Of course, they had both unfriended Janelle right away when the harassment started, and they tried to just ignore it. It wasn't like they were focused on Janelle. They were living their lives. And then the harassment escalated. A woman named Linda Stevens would later testify to an ugly incident she witnessed. Linda was also connected to Bill and Billie Jean because her husband Roy worked with Bill. Linda worked at a country store that served as a convenience store and a small restaurant. She was working the counter and saw Billie Jean pull up to the gas pump. Tyler was a newborn and was in a car seat in the back. This would have been in late summer. Billie Jean came in and gave her a 20 and started pumping her gas. Linda then saw a car come screeching into the lot. She saw two women. The one driving was a blonde, but she didn't recognize them. She said they were yelling and gesturing wildly at Billie Jean. She stepped outside and asked Billie Jean if she should call the cops, and Billie Jean tearfully said yes. At this, the car with the two women peeled back out of the lot. Billie Jean told her it was Barbara and Janelle Potter, Barbara being the blonde at the wheel. She said the Potter women had called her trash and said that she didn't deserve to have her son. Linda would later testify that Billie Jean was visibly shaken. She was trembling and crying and told Linda that she had been on the way to Tyler's first pediatrician appointment, but that now she was going to find Bill to take her. She left without getting her change for the gas. People may discount online harassment, especially from a woman like Janelle. But by now, Billie Jean was well-versed in Janelle's delusions, and being confronted physically, especially when she had her newborn son with her, was truly terrifying. And things only got worse. Along with the Facebook harassment, Janelle had taken to posting on a site called Topics. If you're not familiar, Topics was a news website that left an open, anonymous forum for users to comment on. The site was specific to geography, meaning that cities and even small towns like Mountain City had their own page. As I'm sure you know, these types of anonymous forums can get ugly, particularly in a small town where everyone knew each other and grudges lasted a long time. It's a nice place to go shitster if you're so inclined, as we know Janelle was. Starting in 2015, many lawsuits were filed against Topics for defamation and harassment. Topics actually charged users to have comments removed. So if someone was out there making up lies about you, you had to pay a fee to get it removed. At one point, the Attorney General of Kentucky raged in the press that essentially Topics was making you pay to get your good name back. And he was right. And the local news forums were finally shut down this past December. But when the Janelle drama was going on in 2011, Topics was still going strong, and Janelle was an active user on the forum, constantly raging about Bill, Billie Jean, and their friends. In October of 2011, Bill Payne showed his sister Tracy a 3-ring binder notebook full of printouts from Topics and Facebook. He also showed it to his friend Brad Osborne. He was collecting evidence on Janelle. Not so much for the police, who had never been much help anyway, but he was going to Jamie Curd and then to Buddy Potter. There were verbal confrontations with both men. Both denied Jill was doing the harassing, despite all the proof Bill showed them. They insisted it was Billie Jean and her friends hacking Janelle's accounts and creating fake online profiles. Sadly, Bill was trying to be kind. He still felt sorry for Janelle and thought her family was naive and strange, and he was trying to handle it directly with the men in Janelle's life. But of course, it wasn't Billie Jean or her friends creating the fake profiles. It was Janelle. She also started using pseudonyms, always male names like Matt Potter and also Chris. Yes, that Chris. The Chris from the CIA. The one that emailed daily with Barbara and began emailing with Janelle's secret boyfriend, Jamie Curd. But the funny thing was, Chris always emailed from Janelle's AOL account. How this was explained to Barb and Jamie, I'm not really sure, except that the two of them were highly gullible. Chris said that he spoofed Janelle's email for security reasons. Now, you and I know this is ridiculous. And frankly, no matter how gullible Jamie Curd was, you would think he'd know better. He was actually pretty handy with computers, despite his lack of education. It's how he finally got Barb and Buddy to trust him. He started coming over to help when the computer froze up, which it did about monthly. He would clean the hard drive and clear the cookies and get Janelle and Barb back online. If he was that sophisticated, how could he believe in the Chris character that emailed him from Janelle's email? Well, this part is just sad. He wanted to believe. He was in love with Janelle. He wanted to have a relationship out in the open with her, to be her boyfriend, and to be accepted by the Potters. He wanted to take care of her. She was the first woman who had ever paid him any attention. And Janelle, as sheltered and naive as she supposedly was, knew exactly how to work Jamie. They called each other baby and said they loved each other repeatedly. Jamie even snuck her a cell phone by throwing a pay-per-minute cheapie in the shrubs at the Potter house for Janelle to sneak out and collect, because naturally, Barbara and Buddy wouldn't allow her to have a cell phone. Police and the TBI would later find some very explicit selfies Janelle had sent to Jamie. It's not clear whether the two ever consummated their secret love, because the Potters would always deny there was a relationship. From the pictures and hot and heavy messages, it could go either way. It's possible Janelle slipped out to meet him, or it's possible she kept Jamie in a constant state of blue balls, always leaving him wanting more. And not only was Jamie snowed enough to believe this Chris character emailed from Janelle's account, he also believed that Chris somehow used Janelle's cell phone number. He would get texts signed from Chris, just like the emails were. And what were all these emails and texts about? They were about Bill Payne, Billie Jean Hayworth, and Lindsay Thomas. Occasionally, Tara's name would also be thrown in. But most of the ire, just like most of the online harassment, was directed at Bill, Billie Jean, and Lindsay. So were all the emails from Chris to Barbara. Chris told Barb that he was CIA, that he had traveled the world and killed many people. He openly said he wouldn't mind killing a few more. He said he was a tall, good-looking fella who loved dogs. He even sent her pictures of himself. This is the very definition of catfishing, and Janelle was doing it to her own parents. The barrage of email to Barb and Jamie was insane, and it escalated over the course of 2011. The emails got more specific and more threatening. Chris even started mentioning he wouldn't mind, quote, killing that damn baby too. Anything to keep Janelle safe, and the fictional Chris played right into Barb and Buddy's isolated paranoia, their obsession with protecting their grown daughter, and also into Jamie's growing attachment to Janelle. Chris constantly said Janelle was pretty and sweet and kind and fun and caring. Always in that word arrangement, not using commas, but multiple ands. Chris always said Janelle was the epitome of innocence and needed protecting. But of course, Chris was Janelle, and Chris's distinctive writing style would prove that, even if these people were dumb enough to believe that a man could be emailing them from Janelle's account. A man whose writing was becoming increasingly dark and violent. A man who was guiding them into murder. I'm going to pause now for one final commercial break. For Paul Bill Payne, January 31st, 2012 started unremarkably. Paul Bill was delighted with his grandson and loved living with his son and soon-to-be daughter-in-law. He said he saw Billie Jean that morning preparing a bottle for Tyler, and he wished her a good day as he took off for work. Paul Bill worked in Boone, about a half hour away, and he usually left between 6 a.m. and 6:15 to make sure he was on time to clock in at 7 a.m. He was fairly certain he left closer to 6 a.m. on that morning. Bill Payne also clocked in at 7 a.m. at Parkdale Mills. He usually rode with Brad Osborne, Tara's husband. They worked together at the mill, and Brad usually picked him up around 6:30 to 6:45. On that Tuesday morning, he pulled into Bill Payne's driveway as usual around 6:35. He tapped the horn and waited outside for a few minutes. He tried to call Bill and send him a text. No answer. Brad went and let himself in the house through an open sliding glass door. He called Bill's name but didn't get an answer. He said he heard an alarm clock going off and even thought he might have heard the baby whimper, but decided not to intrude further. He then left and went on to work by himself. Roy Stevens, husband to Linda, who had witnessed the altercation between Billie Jean and Barb and Janelle at the gas station, came by the Payne home a little after 10 a.m. He and Linda had been recently separated. Though they were now working things out and she was in the truck with him that morning, he still had his mail forwarded to Bill's house. He had been couch surfing while he was on the outs with his wife, and the mail being at Bill's was just convenient. Bill even left it on a shelf in the kitchen for him. The Stevens noticed that Bill and Billie Jean's car was still in the driveway, though Paul Bill's truck was gone. Linda stayed in the truck as Roy went and let himself in the house as he usually did to collect his mail. It's important to note that the door was always left unlocked. Anyone who has ever lived in a really small town can tell you it isn't all that unusual. Roy went through the same sliding glass door to the home, but immediately felt like something wasn't right. He called Bill's name, but didn't get an answer. The place was eerily quiet. The alarm Brad heard earlier was no longer buzzing. He walked to Bill and Billie Jean's bedroom and found Bill Payne dead on their bed. He wasn't dressed for work, he was still in his underwear, and he had been shot point blank in the face. His neck had also been slashed. Staggering from the room, Roy yelled out for Linda to call 911. She rushed into the house to call from their phone, and Roy went looking for Billie Jean. He found her in the third bedroom, lying on her left side on the floor, still clutching little Tyler in her arms. She had also been shot point blank through her right temple, falling to the floor but not dropping her baby. He instinctively grabbed the baby from her arms. Little Tyler was all cried out and quiet, with his mother's blood smeared on his small forehead. It's a wonder he was alive, that Billie Jean didn't drop him or fall on top of him as she died. What kind of animal shoots a woman in the head who is holding an infant? The scene was horrific. Police were called in minutes, and they immediately called in the TBI. TBI began interviewing all friends and relatives of the couple. At first, no one could think of any enemies. Lindsay Thomas even admitted to law enforcement that Bill had a drug problem and that he also sold small quantities of pills. The sheriff's department was puzzled by this. It's a small town. If Bill had been any kind of real dealer, he would have been on their radar. But as it was, he was merely selling pills or his Suboxone strips in exchange for a few pills or a little cash. It was definitely small time, and he was not related to any bigger dealers or gangs. It didn't take long for almost everyone who knew the young couple to point the finger at the Potter family. Though it seemed insane that their bizarre feud would end in such a shocking way, it was all anyone could think of. There was no other motive for anyone to execute this couple. So the very next day, the TBI investigators were at the Potters for an interview. Rather than play it cool, Janelle couldn't stop rambling. Though she initially insisted that they were no longer fighting and it had all been resolved with no hard feelings, she launched into a tirade about Bill Payne, Billie Jean Hayworth, and Lindsay Thomas. She sat there telling a TBI agent about how these people had bullied her online, how they created fake profiles, how they had threatened her life. She claimed they threatened to kill her parents and cut off her head. She said they threatened to have her raped because she was a virgin. She even claimed that Lindsay Thomas had a $3,000 bounty on her head. It was insane. And as she sat there rambling on and on, Barbara often spoke up, agreeing with what Janelle said, supposedly corroborating her daughter's strange version of events. Buddy also spoke up, grunting often, even claiming that he was in a public restroom and overheard men talking about taking Janelle out to a field and raping her. Janelle claimed they made harassing phone calls to her, and she also claimed that Bill Payne came and fired shots at the house, something else her parents backed her up on. She also said he tried to kick in her garage door while she was home alone once. One thing the Potter family continually and loudly denied was that Jamie Curd was Janelle's boyfriend, though that is what the police had already been told by Lindsay Thomas and Paul Bill. Can you imagine being an investigator and sitting there listening to this madness? This incredible fiction of people hacking computers and posting anonymous threats, creating multiple accounts all to harass this poor shut-in. This now 30-year-old bizarre child woman who lived with her equally bizarre parents. You know what's even crazier? Reading it for yourself. When the TBI showed up to question the Potters, they came with two search warrants, one for the house and one for the Potter computer, so that technicians could delve into Janelle and Barbara's email accounts and also into Janelle's Facebook page. As they interviewed the Potters, agents were looking around the house. They'd already collected two garbage bags from the back of Buddy's truck that were filled with shredded paper. Now, right in front of the officers, Barbara went and snatched up some papers and started ripping them up. Pulling them from her hands, they saw it was printed out photographs of Billie Jean, Bill, Lindsay, and Tara. While the TBI was still at the Potters, they sent another agent to pick up Jamie Curd. They didn't know what he meant at first, but when he was taken into the interview room, he asked, quote, "Is the CIA here?" He was interrogated for 2 days. He held up for the first, but they finally wore him down. He admitted he was there when the murders happened, but that he didn't participate. But he implicated Buddy Potter. He told the investigators all about Janelle's problems and told them she had a brother named Chris. The puzzle was slowly unraveling. Even if Jamie wouldn't cop to the murders, at the very least, he failed to warn his cousin, Bill Payne. He said, quote, "I never told Bill about the things they'd email me about. I thought it was just people talking shit. If you stir shit, you'll get it on you. I didn't want to look like I was driving the gas truck." It's telling that during all of this, Bill still talked to Jamie Curd, just like he kept the notebook and tried to reason with Buddy Potter by showing him proof instead of going to the police. He never cut off his friend and cousin, despite Jamie's connection to the Potters. Bill Payne, no matter his addictions or problems, was a good man. He wasn't trying to get the Potters in trouble. He still really felt sorry for Janelle and seemed to realize how mentally unstable they all were. After the cops booked Jamie Curd on 2 counts of first-degree murder, the police got him to call Buddy while they recorded. He never got Buddy to specifically admit anything, but when he made statements about, quote, what we did, Buddy usually grunted, uh-huh, or said, yeah. It wasn't exactly a confession, but it was enough. They swore out a warrant for Buddy's arrest. On February 7th, they descended carefully on the Potter home. Carefully, because they knew that Buddy was always well-armed. Buddy famously wore 2 guns on a belt, just like an Old West cowboy. You gotta love that open carry law in Tennessee. When agents came in the house, they said it looked like Buddy was reaching for his belt. There was a loaded .45 caliber gun holstered on his right hip. They didn't waste time. They jumped and pinned him to the ground quickly. After taking him to the station, they questioned him for hours. He acted more confident than Jamie Curd, practically fearless. He acknowledged the problems his family had with Bill Payne and Billie Jean, even confirming he had verbal confrontations with Bill. But he firmly denied involvement in the murders. Then police brought out the recording of Jamie Curd confessing, and Buddy went pale. Though at this point Jamie had tried to recant, the damage was done. They had his confession, and they had the recording with Buddy. And Buddy finally realized it was pointless. After grumbling that Jamie had thrown him under the bus, he admitted he killed Bill and Billie Jean and insisted he did it to protect his family. He went back through the litany of tired accusations that Janelle had spewed in the first interview. That Bill, Billie Jean, and Lindsay wanted his family dead. They wanted Janelle to be raped and her head cut off. There was a $3,000 bounty on her head. He repeated everything almost verbatim. It was like he was brainwashed. And he was. I think of all 3 Potters, Buddy was actually the least responsible, although he was the one that pulled the trigger. He took everything his wife and daughter told him as gospel. He didn't email. He didn't get online. That was a foreign world to Buddy. But Buddy did insist he had been on a CIA mission when he was in Vietnam. He definitely had delusions of his own grandeur that probably helped the mental gymnastics he had to do to believe in Chris, the CIA agent who was so kindly looking over his family. You know who didn't come off as a babe in the woods? Barbara. The police let Buddy call his wife from jail. Though he was warned on the stock recording on all jail calls that the call would be recorded, Buddy confided in his wife that he had confessed. He said, I did it. They know I did it. Barbara paused for a moment and then coolly responded that no, he had been at home that evening. You could even hear Janelle in the background piping up and shouting, yeah, Daddy, you were here that night. Barbara was trying to alibi her husband, but it was done. Buddy had confessed and the evidence was growing. They were searching through the Potter computer and one agent had the mind-numbing task of taping together all that shredded paper they had found in Buddy's truck. It turned out to be a treasure trove. Basically, the Potter women were smart enough to delete a lot of the crazy shit they wrote, but they were vain or obsessed enough to print it all out first. If only Buddy had made it to the dump before TBI came to question them, much of the evidence might not have been found. Because of all this, the DA got special warrants for AOL and Yahoo to look for even more evidence. Jamie Curd received a plea deal of 25 years for his part in the murders, for his testimony against the Potters. It took some convincing, but prosecutor Dennis Brooks wore him down. He found that Jamie Curd was basically a good person, a little naive, but he possessed a sort of primitive intelligence, akin to what we'd call street smarts, though I guess you might call it hill smarts in Mountain City. Jamie was painfully aware of his pathetic life, of his loneliness, and the more that came out about Janelle, the more he realized that she'd played him. Despite all of her professions of love, the nude and graphic selfies, her begging him to protect her, he now saw what she had done. And he finally had to admit that she was actually Chris. That all those emails and texts that did literally come from Janelle's email account and phone were indeed from his beloved, not some imaginary CIA agent. And where did Janelle come up with Chris? It seems super specific, even for an online persona. James Brooks, in his book, pointed out that Janelle had a fascination with all things military, probably from idolizing her father, particularly the Marines. The bulldog is their mascot, and her Facebook page was filled with puppy images of bulldogs. Her email address was bull2dog@aol.com. But you know where else she came up with a Chris? There just so happened to be a Chris in her graduating class in Pennsylvania. He was tall and handsome, just as online Chris was described. He had also been popular, barely even knowing Janelle was alive. Brooks had him testify at her trial, and he specifically watched Janelle for a reaction. Would she look embarrassed? Would she look guilty? No, James Brooks said she stared at this Chris intently, apparently unaware anyone was looking at her for a reaction. His gut told him she had once been obsessed with this man as she became about Bill and Billie Jean. This was her first fatal crush. Luckily, this Chris had moved after high school, going to college out of state. Janelle moved with her family at 22 to Tennessee, but she had kept tabs on her first crush. It was this Chris's picture that she used online as a profile picture for her fake Facebook account and for online forums. It was this Chris's picture that she sent to her mother as she pretended to be him and brag about his CIA exploits. And her only real boyfriend, Jamie Curd, watched all of this. He testified against her and Barbara, and the more that came out at their trial, the more despondent he became. He didn't testify to all of his actions that day, but he did admit them after the trial to prosecutor James Brooks. He confessed to Brooks his part at the murder scene. Though he insisted he didn't know what was going on when Buddy picked him up that morning, he explained how Buddy drove to the Payne home, and it slowly dawned on him what was going to happen. It was between 6 and 6:30 a.m., the perfect window where no one was at the house but the couple and the baby. He said Buddy parked at a church down the road, away from the house, an important detail because police have always questioned how the murderer snuck up on Bill. It wasn't like the family was sleeping, and they had a dog that was known to bark at any approaching cars. But Buddy hadn't driven up the driveway, and the dog hadn't heard them. He and Jamie crossed a field and approached quietly on foot. Jamie said up until they got near the house, he didn't know what was going on and warned Buddy that Bill would have a fit if he saw them. He said then, Buddy handed him a gun. He said he told Buddy, "I can't kill anybody," and Buddy replied, "You don't have to, I just need you to stand at the door." There were two ways in and out of that house. The front door, which was blocked by a baby swing, and that sliding glass door, the same unlocked door that Brad Osborne and Roy Stevens would both later come through. Jamie stood in the doorway of the sliding glass door as Buddy walked to Bill and Billie Jean's bedroom. He said he heard Bill say, "What the hell?" and then he saw Billie Jean run out of the room. There was a shot, and Billie Jean threw him a terrified look before running down the hallway to the other bedroom. He said then Buddy stepped out of the bedroom where Bill lay dead and gave Jamie a questioning look. Jamie admitted that he pointed down the hall to where Billie Jean ran. Jamie Curd had admitted to the prosecutor that he stood in the door blocking the only escape Billie Jean had, and then he pointed Buddy in the right direction to murder the young woman. Marvin Buddy Potter was convicted on 2 counts of first-degree murder and sentenced to 2 consecutive life sentences. As I said earlier of the Potter family, he is the least responsible. At least I feel that way. But I do believe it's important to point out that he not only shot Bill Payne in cold blood, but he chased a 23-year-old mother into a bedroom and shot her in the head as she held her infant, barely having even enough time to plead for their lives. I think he's a sick man in his own right. But I also believe he was of limited intelligence too, and was heavily influenced by his wife and daughter. Perhaps his war experience gave him whatever it took to pull that trigger twice, but his wife and daughter put him in that house. Jamie Curd's testimony and Buddy's own confession put him away, and luckily the jury accepted the why of it, as strange as it was. It was difficult to prove just how Janelle and Barbara had convinced Buddy. Unlike in their own dual trial, where there were thousands of emails, hundreds of texts, and 8 megabytes of Facebook data put into evidence showing their hatred and extent of planning. It's not as clear with Buddy. Except you can imagine Barbara and Janelle constantly drilling him with the supposed death threats and harassment Janelle was under. This went on for over 2 years. I guess it's fair to say they wore him down. In court, his attorney brought up his ailing health, his many medications, and the fact that he was constantly on oxygen. Supposedly, if his oxygen became low, he would become very muddled and confused. I'm still not sure that's enough to be duped into cold-blooded murder, but I guess since he wasn't part of the online harassment, it's a little easier to think of him as a confused and manipulated old man. Janelle and Barbara Potter were both found guilty of 2 counts of first-degree murder and are also serving consecutive life sentences. There was an interesting development last year when prosecutor James Brooks was officially censured by the Tennessee Supreme Court. The book he wrote, Too Pretty to Live, The Catfishing Murders of East Tennessee, was published just 8 months after Janelle and Barbara were convicted. The High Court wrote, quote, James Brooks' book was published prior to the conclusions of the appeals of 2 of the convictions. After the book was published, one of the defendants filed a motion for a new trial and a writ of error coram nobis, alleging the book contained evidence that was not presented to the defense. A reviewing judge denied the petition from the attorney, but despite all of his protestations, and Brooks did release a public statement you can look for online, I do believe it was a risk he should not have taken. He should have waited for the appeals process to be finished. You get a sympathetic judge or even a strict-by-the-book judge, and that ruling could have gone very different, and these 2 maniacal women would have been granted new trials. Having said that, his book is fascinating, and it's the best place to go if you want to read much of Janelle's online writing and Barbara's emails. Just buckle up and prepare to take a while to adjust your brain to the typos and grammar issues. Mr. Brooks has great insight into the people he prosecuted, particularly Jamie Curd and Buddy Potter. He seems as ambivalent towards Buddy as I feel. The man is a cold-blooded murderer, and yet he somehow comes off more sympathetic than his wife or daughter. As for Barbara, I don't feel any sympathy towards her. I know she probably also has to be sick in her mind, but I honestly think she is just a horrible, vindictive, nasty person. And it's likely her personality rubbed off on her impressionable daughter. Barbara spews almost as much vile hatred in email that her mentally undeveloped daughter did online. And much of that was directed at her other daughter, Christy, and her elderly mother. I think Barbara was a jealous woman. Though she didn't want a relationship with Christy herself, she was extremely jealous when Christy moved in with her grandmother. The 2 had always been close. Her grandmother had been the actual maternal figure all of Christy's life. Christy freely admitted that she only lived at home with her parents long enough to get a 2-year degree from a community college. Then she moved out of state, got a good job, and got married. She only moved back after her divorce when her grandmother's health really started failing, and she did not have any real relationship with her parents or sister when she moved back. Because though Barbara had moved the family to Tennessee to be close to her mother, and though she had power of attorney, she actually paid the poor old woman little attention. If I had to guess, she was waiting for her to die so she could get her inheritance. Christy moving in and taking care of her mother might jeopardize that. In one of the gazillion emails Barbara wrote planning the murders, she mentions Christy's name. That's right, her daughter was on the hit list too. She often talked about getting rid of Bill, Billie Jean, and Lindsay's bodies to cover up what they were going to do, but she was instructing Chris and Jamie that they should leave Christy's body out in the open because she had an insurance policy on her daughter that she wanted to collect on. I think Barbara Potter is a very cold and sinister woman. I even think it's possible she knew Janelle's stories were bullshit, that she knew Chris wasn't real. But she fed into her daughter's delusions because she enjoyed the drama and because she's an evil woman. As for Janelle, I don't even know where to start. I had thought of peppering this episode with a lot of Janelle's writing, either as herself or as Chris, but honestly, it's hard to understand even when you read it for yourself. You have to read a lot of it and pick up on all of her idiosyncrasies and writing to finally get to the gist of what she was saying. And it was her distinctive grammar and spelling errors, sentence structure, and repetition of certain words that really sold the jury. Prosecutor James Brooks found a forensic linguist and managed to get the state to agree to his fee. Connecting Janelle and Chris's writing was extremely valuable evidence at trial. Janelle and Chris made the exact same spelling errors. For example, the word caring. The root word is care with an E, but Janelle had a habit of forgetting to drop that E in words that converted into a progressive tense verb like caring. Barbara had her own writing quirks. Her grammar and spelling overall were way more advanced than Janelle's, but she abbreviated many words and had a habit of ending email with too many goodbyes. As in, okay then, I need to go to bed, love you, and take care of yourself. Buddy and I care so much about you, and I hope to see you soon. Okay, good night, love Barbie. That, by the way, is an example of how she wrote to the mysterious Chris, the man she supposedly believed was in the CIA and was spoofing her daughter's email. She talked about him and to him like he was her own son. And how did the fictional Chris write? Well, for a supposed CIA agent who was just looking out for an innocent family, he showed a lot of personal hatred for their enemies. Here is a rambling passage on Billie Jean. Quote, "Just die, just die. She is a waste being on earth. Damn whore. They're all whores and always will be, and you can't make them into wives. They have 10 more men they sleep with. They are not happy, and they want everyone else to be happy. Fuck them. I'm happy Janelle is so sweet and caring and will stand up for herself. And what's Lindsay and Billy do nothing but lie and try to get others hurt. Fuck them. I hope they die, 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 and that baby and Bill." Note what she said about not making them into wives. It's important to remember that Janelle had originally had a crush on Bill. I think it never went away. She was obsessed. But when it was clear that he was out of her reach, her obsession transferred to Billie Jean. She was jealous of her, and in extension, jealous of her friends and her baby. Here is another passage written directly to Billie Jean on the Topics forum, though she signed it as Chris. "I'm about to fight with you, Billy. Why don't you shut up your fucking mouth, you bitch? One day you're going to get beat up really good and left for dead. You better shut up, you bitch. Go fuck a cow for all I care. Damn hooker, slutbag, whore, and your bastard baby. Take it with you and leave this fucking town." And it goes on and on like that, but you get the picture. Also important to note, Billie Jean was not posting on Topics at all, much less communicating with Janelle or Chris or Matt or any of her online personas. Janelle was just spewing this madness into the ether. Except, of course, Bill and Billie Jean and Lindsay were all aware she was doing it. It's why Bill had it all printed in a notebook. He thought if he could make Buddy see just how unhinged his daughter was, he could reason with him. But there was no reasoning with Buddy. I think it's safe to say there was no reasoning with anyone in that family. And it's why, again, if only the sheriff's department or DA's office had taken these threats seriously, would Bill and Billie Jean be alive now? I can just imagine you spitting out your drink at that last rant I read you. It's way worse when said out loud. But imagine reading that kind of hatred about yourself online. Wouldn't you be scared? What if you read it about your wife or husband? Wouldn't you be angry and try to stop it? Billie Jean and Lindsay tried to handle it legally. Bill, on the other hand, tried to handle it man-to-man with Buddy. But they were all doing whatever they could to make the harassment stop. I don't think there's any doubt that Janelle was and is mentally ill. You can watch an episode of 2020 to get a look at her. She talks in a baby voice like Minnie Mouse. She tries to act innocent, but her eyes are dead. Maybe if she admitted what she had done and gotten a lawyer to plead her mental defect, things would have turned out differently. But Janelle will likely go on to her grave insisting that she was the one who was harassed and she would never hurt a fly. After all, she was pretty and kind and caring and sweet and fun. And obsessed and hateful and vindictive and murderous. Southern Fried True Crime is written and produced by me, Erica Kelly. The original graphic art is by Coley Horner, and Southern Fried's original music is by Rob Harrison of Gamma Radio. Thank you, Linda Morgan, for suggesting this bizarre case. As always, if you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend or rate and review on iTunes. You can also listen directly from Spreaker, my network online, or on their app. And I'm also on Stitcher, as well as a new podcast app called Himalaya, and many other podcatchers. If you're interested in supporting the show, I have a Patreon page with many different rewards for different levels of donation. Or you could visit my website, southernfriedtruecrime.com, where you can make a one-time donation just by hitting the donate button. I also have a merchandise store open. Just go to whatamaneuver.net and click on Shop by Store, then search for Southern Fried True Crime. I have all sorts of t-shirts, tanks, hoodies, and even onesies for babies. If you have any comments, corrections, or suggestions, you can email me at southernfriedtruecrime@gmail.com. I love hearing from you guys, and I'm always looking for new cases, so please feel free to reach out. I'm also all over social media. Just search the show name in your favorite platform if you'd like to connect with me there. If you're interested in discussing this case or any other episodes further, come check out my discussion group. It's linked to my Southern Fried True Crime Facebook page. And we don't just discuss cases. We share memes, make friends, and even debate Southern pronunciations. Also, a quick note, Facebook's algorithms recently dumped a lot of people from closed groups if they seemed inactive. It wasn't me. If you just enjoy lurking and got dumped, come on back. We'd love to have you. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. Y'all take care.